This is the Territory Story Podcast News Bites. Thanks to Opie Dennis Digital Marketing, your local digital marketing agency.
Yes, hello there, welcome. This is the Territory Story Podcast News Bites. I'm Peter Gowers. Greetings, and I hope you're having a good week. Let's get to the NT Independent online newspaper now to chat with the editor, Chris Walsh. Walshy, how are you, mate?
Hey, I'm good, Pete. Good to see you again.
Good to see you too. Chris, news never stops in the NT, and it seems our illustrious deputy leader from CDU has gone missing, at least when it comes to answering questions from journalists this week, Chris.
Well, at least from us. And I know that we asked him some tough ones, so I guess I'm not surprised. But just following on from last week there, when we spoke briefly about what had transpired at that Senate inquiry into Middlearm, and of course, Bowman humiliating himself there, facing a lot of tough questions, including, you know, from Senator David Pocock around the failure to disclose conflicts of interest, you know, the money, all the money that the university receives in relation to or from those oil and gas companies. So the money that the university receives from the oil and gas companies in relation to the submission that Scott Bowman had made on behalf of the university, and that was supportive of Middlearm. And the questions then were, well, why did you not disclose that, you know, you benefit from these proponents of Middlearm who are pushing this, and why did the university come forward with this submission of support without disclosing that? Meanwhile, there was this whole other issue at play where Bowman had actually attempted to get the Senate committee to suppress from public release letters against CDU's position on the Middlearm precinct. This was from three academics who had filed two letters to the submission saying, or to the inquiry saying, we don't support it and we question why CDU is supporting it. And so Bowman tried to get rid of that completely. And he sends them a letter saying, you shouldn't publish this. I don't agree with it. And they're saying, well, what about academic freedom here? Now, what he had done with the letter, too, was at the end of the letter, we've seen this now because they did publish it. He said, I don't want this letter to be released publicly. The one where he's trying to get the other documents suppressed, the other people's opinions, and they were his own academics. So he's got himself into some serious issues here. Now, of course, this is breach and appears to be breach of university policy around academic freedom, which is also a tenet of the enterprise agreement with staff at CDU. So he's kind of got himself in some trouble there. Then there's other issues around policies around the conflicts of interest and whether or not he disclosed it. So we sent questions to him on Monday morning saying, how do you explain yourself here? He chose not to. I think he got a media person to write back to us saying the vice chancellor will not be responding to the to your questions. So, you know, we said, okay, well, what about this other one that's just come up now on Monday? See, the chief minister put out a statement saying that she was putting $2 million a year towards regional monitoring of fracking in the Beetaloo Basin and saying that CDU will get the bulk of that contract. Now, that's a whole other conflict of interest that Bowman did not disclose to the Senate inquiry into Middlearm, that that the university stands to profit off of the fracking in Beetaloo that would also, as we know, have been earmarked to be used to power the Middlearm facility, industrial precinct, petrochemical precinct, whatever you want to call it. So Bowman's just kind of gone to ground over all of this now. He won't respond. I guess he's embarrassed himself enough. The NTEU, so that's the National Tertiary Education Unions, came out to say Bowman's efforts were highly concerning. What he had done, trying to gag academics, is an egregious attack on academic freedom and free speech and contravenes the values and enduring principles of CDU. Academics have a right to respond to CDU's submission, which supported this project despite no consultation with the university community. Academic freedom is a cornerstone of all universities, they said. The vice chancellor's request for censorship should alarm all staff and students. Thankfully, senators rejected the request, but it raises serious questions about the vice chancellor's commitment to a core university value. We asked them, is the university investigating this and these breaches of policy? concerning the academic freedom and also conflicts of interest. He would not respond to that, but we do know that there are issues that were raised here. He did show up briefly on ABC on Monday morning, ABC Radio, which was very strange, and the questions were terrible. I don't think that the presenter had actually heard or listened to what happened there on Thursday because, yeah, it was... Anyway, he didn't really say much on there. I mean, he wasn't asked about his letter ordering the suppression of dissenting opinion not be publicly released. He didn't. Well, he said he supported academic freedom again. But yeah, it was clear that he wasn't asked about the conflicts of interest, including the gifts and money. And the gas lobbyist middle arm architect and former chief minister Paul Henderson was the university's chancellor. You know, there was stuff raised about that. Remember, he was supposed to provide the conflict of interest register that Henderson had. Now, remember, Henderson's the chancellor, and he's heavily involved in this project. He was part of the Territory Economic Reconstruction Commission that recommended it along with... He co-chaired that with Andrew Liveris from Dow Chemicals fame. And you start to see some stuff going on here that doesn't really look good and smells a bit funny when, you know, you've got the chancellor of the university who's heavily involved in this from the beginning. He's representing clients. We don't even know who they are. So all of this has been raised, and Bowman's just staying silent right now. And we're still going to try and get an explanation of what the hell this $2 million contract is with the government to monitor fracking in the Beetaloo sub-basin. I mean, it seems odd that CDU would even be given a contract like that. So a lot more to come on this still, Pete, even though the vice chancellor's hiding out.
And I didn't even know that CDU had a scuba division, so that'll be interesting to talk about that.
Scuba?
Yeah, with their deep sea monitoring.
Well, this is just Beetaloo subway. This is on ground. So I don't know, man. Look, it's, that there's so many questions still to be answered here. So anyway, we'll have more for you on the weekend.
I was just picturing the CDU monitors turning up with all their scuba gear and not realizing that fracking was done on ground and not in not under the sea.
Yeah.
All right, let's turn to another serious issue now, and the government is set to appeal the firefighters' Fair Work Industrial Relations Unicorn, as it's being called, overtime win that could affect all fireys, Chris.
Yeah, Pete, this is an interesting one and quite a complicated one, really. But essentially, so the Fair Work Commission has come out. They found that a deduction of a portion of an NT firefighter's time in lieu hours that were accrued as part of compulsory overtime was contrary to the original agreement signed with the NT government, suggesting the practice of wiping their banked hours if not used within a year bordered on wage theft. So this is interesting. So Commissioner Bernie Reardon handed down his judgment in the matter of Manny Kalakis versus the NT Commissioner for Public Employment on March 21st. The decision could result in the NT government having to back pay all NT firefighters, which, of course, is now being appealed by the government. They didn't like this, and they don't want to be reimbursing it, but reimbursing, I guess, every single firefighter, and it could be for many years here that this has gone on. But it related to whether the applicant here was paid appropriately when working or on rec leave, and whether the limited accrual of leisure leave to 90 hours a year was appropriate. It examined whether Northern Territory Fire Rescue Services should be able to strip 14 hours off of firefighters' recreation leave to account for the 7 weeks annual leave where leisure leave is not being accrued. So, it was essentially that they were given these hours for overtime. They'd get paid for two of them. They'd get four a week, and two of them would go towards leave, recreational leave. That appears then that if they didn't use that by the end of the year, it was taken away from them. So you're looking at about 14 hours is what they worked out here. So Reardon had said that the scenario was unfair. He wrote in his ruling, he said those employees who accrue more than 90 hours of leisure leave are entitled to compensation for every hour of every week that they work beyond their standard 38 hours. This system is unique, is the restriction it places on the amount of hours which can be accumulated and the apparent wizardry of the hours simply disappearing if they are not taken within a 12-month period. The Commissioner for Public Employment has lodged an appeal since this decision has come down. It'll be heard by the full bench of the Fair Work Commission on May 7th. It argues that the commissioner here, Worden, was mistaken in the facts or failed to take some material consideration. The government also asked for a stay on the original decision. So, yeah, this is, like I said, could end up costing the government some money here on back pay for these fireys. And they don't want anything to do with this. The government, they're going to shut it down. But, he had talked about just how it bordered on wage theft. And it would appear that the government did not take appropriate actions when accruing any more hours. It would be an oxymoron to deduct 2 hours of leisure leave, he said, which must be taken in the calendar year and can only accumulate to 90 hours from rec leave, which is no restriction and no expiry date. So, it's going to be interesting to see how this all kind of shakes out.
Yeah, it is. And I'm not going to prejudge what's happening or what's happened, but I'll be really interested to see the outcome of it because, I think of all the emergency services people that we have working on behalf of all Territorians and, I'm of the personal belief that you can't pay them enough for the work they do.
Yeah, absolutely, Pete. So, when you're then going back and stripping them of hours, it's going to be hard to justify that. And, the year 1993 came up. This must have been going on. This could have been going on for 30 years. So, going to be quite significant here when it all comes out.
It is turning to another matter now, and that is relating to the police minister who's given himself a giant pat on the back. And now the youth curfew is lifted in Alice Springs, Chris.
Yeah, well, look, it lifted Tuesday morning at 6 a.m. So we're still waiting to see what the aftermath of that will be. The government has said that they are keeping 25 additional officers in Alice Springs. I think they said to the end of June, and that includes those 10 rotating officers from South Australia, which will be here, I think, until the end of the month. The government's also pledging to provide coverage at bottle shops during that time. But, of course, you'll remember that 25 additional officers had actually been sent down to Alice Springs before that riot broke out. Questionable there whether 25 is enough to keep things in order. And at this point, we're not hearing a lot about what happened in the first night. So it's Wednesday now, so last night, Tuesday. Not sure exactly on any or the number of incidents that occurred. But look, that doesn't stop Potsy from coming out here and patting himself on the back, saying that he's done this job done. Not well, specifically, necessarily, but it's done. He said that it could be brought, though, into different communities. I guess you'd be looking at Catherine, Tennant Creek, but suggested here for the first time that laws would have to be changed first. He said, everything's on the table. We'll do whatever we need to keep Territorians safe. I make no excuses or apologies for it. He's being a tough guy here, Pete. He said, we'll continue to do that. If that means we have to change the laws, we will. Well, it probably meant you should have done that before enacting this thing in Alice Springs, as we pointed out a couple of times.
Yeah, absolutely. That might have been good because they wouldn't have had all the backlash and the issues that popped up as a result of the ill declaring the right reason for putting in the curfew in the first place.
Yeah, that's
no
right.
No riots. They don't count.
Yeah, exactly. And it really wasn't supposed to be used for crime situations at all, right? Like we said, this was about emergency weather events, cyclones, flooding, et cetera, and to get people out of their homes. It was all under the Emergency Management Act, which we spoke about last week. And of course, remember, questions were raised about their legal advice, although they kept saying how great it was when they actually signed the wrong. Well, they signed the right instrument to enact it, but it was the wrong ministry. So that those questions were, that was quite embarrassing stuff on the part of the government. But they tried to fix it. We're still not sure, right, if any of this was done properly. So to hear the minister now finally coming out and admitting that that they may have to change the laws, if that means we have to change the laws, we will. I think that's a pretty tacit admission that they know that how they did this wasn't right, but they needed to do something quick, like they've said, to make it look like they were doing something. The people of Alice Springs seemed happy with it, having that that police presence. I think was probably the biggest part of it, was just having that many cops there, and they felt safer and they started going about their day-to-day lives feeling a lot safer than they had before. So for that reason, it was good. But But we're going to see how this all kind of plays out in the days to come here and what happens, because it doesn't seem like there is a solid plan yet in place. They're hoping that everything will be fine. Now, interesting to know, Pete, Southern Commander James Gray Spence, our old friend from the Inquiry, he's come out now to make some comments in relation to how that went. I guess forgetting, or hoping that we all forget, that he was actually gone for the entire, pretty much all of the curfew while it was in place, because the police commissioner had said that he needed a break. And he was taking a break. But anyway, he came back saying that everything was good now, and I guess with the curfew and with Alice, and that they'll continue to monitor and be out and do what they have to do to ensure that crime doesn't escalate now following this lifting of the curfew.
Exactly. And Chris, I want to make some comments on the weekend edition about taking responsibility for things. So I'll just let that hang there until we chat.
We don't have a lot of that in this place, Pete, but I'm happy to talk about it, as always.
All right, mate. I'll catch you on the weekend edition.
Sounds good. We'll see you then.
That was Chris Walsh from the NT Independent. Weekends with Walshy back again Saturday morning. We'll release that around 7 a.m. and we'll catch you again next week on the Territory Story podcast, News Bites.
That was the Territory Story News Bites for this week. Thanks to Opie Dennis Digital Marketing, your local digital marketing agency.